1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio WHIO and Sim Trainer Indoor Range and Firearms Training Center present Shooting from the Hip. It's straight talk about firearms, ammunition, self-defense, when and where you can carry, legislation, and legal issues. All about safety, training, and so much more. Your hosts are Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery. Jeff is a 24-year veteran police officer, currently assigned City of Kettering Detective, and owner and lead instructor at Sim Trainer. Mark is a retired Air Force officer, senior staff instructor at Sim Trainer, and NRA-certified instructor in multiple disciplines. They're here to bring to the microphone the truth about guns. Join them by calling 457-1290. Now, Shooting from the Hip. On AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery. Sim Trainer is the sponsor of this show. Sim Trainer is the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. And we're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L. We can be reached by phone at 937-293-3914, or you can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. We're a full-service range. We have 10 stalls indoor that's climate-controlled, air-conditioned in the summer, heated in the winter. It has a mechanical target retrieval system for your convenience. We offer a variety of different training opportunities in addition to recreational shooting. And our staff are very knowledgeable in a variety of different areas that might be of interest to you, anywhere from personal carry weapons to holsters and a variety of other topics. I wanted to mention to our listeners today that this time of year is when a lot of the new guns are starting to show up on the market, and I'm going to liquidate a considerable number of guns from our range inventory to try to get some of the new guns. And I just want to tell our listeners about a few great deals you can take advantage of. These deals apply, first of all, to members, but if there's listeners out there that want to stop by and take a peek, and members have had a chance to get these guns and they haven't shown much interest, I'll certainly sell them to pretty much anybody that's qualified to purchase a firearm. But I want to first of all let you know about the SIG 522 22 caliber rifle. It's a similar to many of the AR M4 type rifles, except for the primary functional operations, a little bit different, but nonetheless it's a very good gun to get started in. It's a flat top gun that requires that you use doesn't require, but it's best if it's used with some sort of a red dot. You can, however, get flip up battle type iron sights if you so desire, but we have those discounted price at $399. You're going to find those MSRP as high as $575 on the web, but we have a couple of those left, and I want to get rid of those to make room for several other guns. Another very interesting gun that we have in inventory is a SIG P220 C3. That's the Carry 3 45 caliber SIG Sauer. And that gun MSRP is for about $1,200, and it's a great-looking gun, a very ergonomically correct gun. It fits in your hand real nice, shoots real nice. That's discounted priced at $749. Basically, what I'm doing, I'm getting rid of these guns at the prices we pay for them when we brought them into the range program. They've been seldom fired, most of them less than a few hundred rounds, and that gun is an absolute steal at that price. If anybody's interested in that one, make sure you know it's the SIG P220, the C3 version. I also have a Walther PKS 380. That's a relatively new gun, came out this last year. I have one of those available for about $399. We have a Taurus Judge. That's the revolver that shoots both the 410 and the 45 long Colt, either alternately or one or the other for self-defense, personal safety. And that's another great gun, MSRP. All across the web for between $459 and $499, and I'm going to liquidate that at $399. I have a Ruger 10/22 Tactical. That's the tactical variation of the classic Ruger 10/22 rifle, and all they did basically is they took the wooden stock and the wooden forearm off, and they put a tactical-looking black polymer. Made it look like a tactical gun with a collapsible stock on the back end.
They made it scary looking?
Yeah, they made it scary looking. Oh. It's actually quite interesting, and it's a lot of fun to shoot. And with that adjustable stock, it makes it adjustable to fit your kids or the adults, and it's pretty interesting to shoot. In addition, I have a couple of SIG P232 380 in stainless variation. That's the SIG Sauer very popular selling 380 model. They've also come out with the 238, but the 232 is by far one of the best 380s on the market. I have a couple of those discount priced at $549, and those will retail for average retail for around $650. So if you're interested in any of those, you can stop by the range and or drop us an email. Let us know that you're interested, and we'll make arrangements so you can get down there and see those guns. Some great deals, and again, we just want to liquidate them because there's a number of guns that have hit the market. Just this last week, I picked up two for the members to start shooting and trying out. One is the Generation 4 Glock 19. The Generation 4 19 is a little slightly improved variation of the ever-popular Glock 19. It also comes, the Generation 4 is pretty much across the Glock line, but the 19, 27, 26, and 17 are probably the most common selling, and in our case, the Glock 19 is the weapon of choice for many of the people in the personal protection and concealed carry option. And the Generation 4 is very interesting. The grip is a little different. It has a little bit of stiffling on it that makes it a little bit more, it stays in your hand a little bit smoother.
It's almost like it's got grip tape built in.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's really a nice grip when you put your hand around it. It has adjustable back strap, as we've talked in earlier shows. I don't know if they satisfied the need in the industry to make that gun a little bit smaller, because the smallest grip is their standard Glock 19 grip, so it doesn't make it any smaller than it was. It's certainly not much narrower, but it's still a very good gun, and I want to encourage people to take advantage of getting in and trying that gun out. It has the double portion guide rod, which supposedly has made a significant improvement in the functional operation of the Glock, which was already in great shape.
Very reliable.
The other gun that we just purchased this last week for our members to shoot is the Ruger SR9 in compact version. The SR9 was one of Ruger's more successful semi-automatic pistols, and now they've come out with the compact version, which is very nice. It's the nice thing about it, in addition to being small, it's also slim. So for people who might have a small hand grip, that's something I want you to give some thought to checking out. It has a very similar trigger to the Glock and the Springfield and the Smith & Wesson, in that it's a safe action type trigger, and same action every time you pull the trigger. It's a nice smooth trigger pull, and but being a little bit slimmer is going to make it easier for those people with small hands.
Yeah, and it's a little bit slimmer than the comparable Glock, which would be like a Glock 26 or 27. And if you already shoot an SR9 and you want something that's a little bit smaller for carry as well, then going with the SR9 compact means you've got exactly the same functional operation of the gun, and you can carry a little bit smaller, a little easier to conceal. So it's a great option for people that already have an SR9.
Yeah, here in the very near future, Smith just came out with a compact variation of their M&P, and I'm going to get one of those in, and there's a couple others out there that we're interested in, but I'm going to go ahead and liquidate this inventory and get that taken care of.
Okay, well, that's super deals available to anyone who's interested in that. Our first priority always goes to our members and then to people who have taken classes with us, but if there's some of those that are still available, or if you're interested in one and you're not a member of the range but you'd like to be, that's always an option as well. We have several different membership options, and we're not very exclusive. All you have to do is be able to pass a background check, and that covers probably 90% of the population, so that's a good option for folks. We do have a call on the line, and let's go out to the call. Let's go out to the phones and talk to Kent, who is calling in from Greenville. Kent, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
What is your question? What can we help you with today?
I would like to reload some reduced loads for practice for 44 mag. What do you recommend as the powder?
Well, as far as the powder, I just want you to go with any of the standard manufacturer's brands. As far as the load, you're going to have to stick to the manufacturer's specifications. And the other thing to remember, when you say you want to do the reduced load, is that just so you can get more accurate in shooting that 44, or what's the reason?
Well, just a little less recoil, and I thought if we could get it down around 44 special velocity, it would be a little easier to shoot.
Why would you just not get 44 special?
Because I have a lot of 44 mag brass to reload, and I don't have any 44 special.
I see.
Yeah, the thing you're going to have to be careful about that is making sure that you've got enough in there in order to give you enough propulsion in order to eject the bullet out of the casing. So My recommendation, I don't ever recommend soft loads. I'm just not much into reloading to begin with. And then when people want to soft load, it's usually the competitive shooters that want to do that. I would say stick with whatever the manufacturer specifications are for minimum amounts of powder, and then go from there. But as far as recommendation, I can't offer you any in that area.
Do you have any reloading manuals? If you do reloading, I'm sure you must.
Yes. They all have the starting loads, but I just wondered if there's any, if you should or could reduce the load any more than that.
Well, if they're giving you minimum levels, I would not go below the minimum levels. They do those for reasons, and some of the reasons are because of safety issues, both on the low and the high end, because there's some people who in the past, I was on a range one time when an individual loaded 38 rounds way too low, and he ended up firing 3 rounds consecutively in the barrel of his gun and didn't even realize they weren't coming out the barrel of the gun. So not having sufficient power or powder can be a problem, just as having too much can result in the gun blowing up. But that's an issue that you need to be very attentive to. And my recommendation, you know, coming from a business like us, we're going to recommend you stay within the manufacturer's specifications or the manual's specifications, and you don't ever drop any lower than what they recommend as minimum powder
thank
loads.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
That's what I needed to know.
Okay, welcome.
Thank Kent,
you
thanks very much for calling the show. Let's take our first break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Shooting from the Hip. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery today. We talked a little bit before the break about some great deals we have on some liquidated guns that we're going to get rid of down at the range and try to get some of the newer models in for people to try out, see if that's what they want. Also want to remind our listeners that ammo's pretty much broke open except for 380. We've had plenty of ammo supply, and it's rolling pretty good right now, and it's a lot better than it was last summer. If you remember this time last year, we were desperate to get anything we could, but the manufacturers are doing a pretty good job of catching up, and except for 380, which is here and there, everything else seems to be available in pretty abundant supplies. I know that last week we had Ken Hansen from Buckeye Firearms Association on talking about a variety of issues surrounding the Chicago case, and Mark and I were just talking on the break about some of the ramifications of that decision. And Mark, why don't you tell them about how Chicago's handling that decision?
Yeah, Chicago really didn't like the fact that the Supreme Court told them that they were wrong and have been wrong for a long time. So they came out with some new laws, ordinances. They were 45-0. They voted on these new gun restrictions. So they recognize they can't have a complete ban. So instead, they're going to make it virtually impossible for anyone to have a gun if there's any way they can do it. Within 100 days, anyone who wants to keep a gun in the city will have to register, get their training, and pay their fees. They'd also have any of the estimated 10,000 Chicagoans convicted of a gun offense will have to register at their local police station, like sex offenders. They've basically done everything they possibly can to live up to the letter without living up to the spirit of the decision in the McDonald case. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. There already are some lawsuits that are being prepared to oppose these new regulations, these new ordinances. And they want to, you know, people need to consider that the folks that they elect, elections have consequences. And unfortunately, for a long time in Chicago, those consequences have been the daily regime and the restrictions of freedoms that go along with that. And that's unfortunate. So maybe this decision will help to break some of that loose. They're certainly having to rethink some of those things. But maybe the people will also start to rethink and recognize that that Otis McDonald did them a tremendous favor by bringing the lawsuit in the first place, and they need to maybe rethink some of their decisions when they go into the voting booth.
You know what's real interesting about that, Mark? for 10 years when I was going to college, and then when I graduated from school and got a job right out of school, we lived in Southern Illinois. Thank goodness it wasn't in Chicago.
And yeah, it's a little different down there.
And you got to understand that in Illinois, you live in Chicago, and everything south of Chicago is Southern Illinois. That's kind of how we look at
exactly.
it. And we were hoping at some point that it would just break off and float out into the middle of the lake, but
didn't happen that way.
But on the news, obviously, you had the Chicago News Channel, and it was interesting that night in and night out, the violence of criminals, the criminal acts of violence, preying on innocent people. It was a nightly event, and that was always the headline. And there wasn't a whole lot. There wasn't a whole lot of consideration given whatsoever about people defending themselves, even though Chicago is one of the most violent cities in the country. That's a fact. They can't refute that, and yet they continue, like Washington D.C., to come up with stupid legislation in order to strap the innocent, law-abiding citizens and make it easier for them to be victims of predatory criminals.
They always make the argument, "Well, we have all this violence, and so we have to do something. We have to restrict guns." Wait a minute. You have to do something. How about arresting the criminals and keeping them in jail? See how that works instead of putting law-abiding citizens under further restrictions when they're not the ones that are causing the problem in the first place.
Well, I'll go a step further. Instead of encouraging law-abiding citizens to take up arms and defend themselves, because Chicago, like every other police jurisdiction in the country, is undermanned. And right now,
absolutely,
I imagine it's as bad, if not worse, than it's ever been, with budgets being the way they are. You can darn well bet that there are fewer police officers policing the streets of Chicago than there are or have been in the past.
Because police and fire are always one of the first things that get cut.
That's exactly right. And I'm sure that's what's going on now. And so the only way they're going to enable people to protect themselves is let them do it themselves. And
let's go out to the phones again and talk to Mike, who's calling in on a cell phone. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a question for Jeff. I've got a valid CCW, and if I have a shirt on concealing my weapon, and let's say the shirt's not buttoned, the wind catches my shirt, and exposes my firearm for like a second until I can grab my shirt and get it back on over the gun. Or if I reach in for my wallet and the gun is exposed while I do that, is that in violation of the CCW laws?
Absolutely not. There's no provision whatsoever that would make the visibility of your gun a crime. And a matter of fact, that happens in a variety of circumstances. Like you describe, individuals go into a grocery store and they reach up on the top counter to grab a jar of sauce or something, and their gun obviously is in view. What typically happens there is some citizen in the aisle happens to see it, and they dial on their phone that there's a crazy man with a gun in the store, and the police have to respond, and they handle that. And we've actually had a couple of those cases in our city, and they've been handled very professionally by the police officers and very appropriately by the armed citizens. There was a police citizen encounter. The individual assured the police officer that he was a law-abiding concealed carry permit holder, and he was permitted to go about his business without any activity on the part of law enforcement, as should have been the case. We got to remember, in our society, there are people out there who aren't familiar with this, and even those that are familiar with it don't agree with it, so they're going to do everything they can to get law involved when they see somebody with a gun.
Right.
Whether your shirt blows open or you accidentally pull it aside, it's not an issue, so you don't have to worry about that at all.
And, Mike, it's important to note that in Ohio, it's not illegal to carry openly. We don't recommend it for tactical and a lot of other reasons, but there's no prohibition against open carry in Ohio, so if your gun happens to be exposed, that's not a legal problem. So thanks very much for calling the show. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to head into the news center with Charles Van Sant. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and indoor firearms training center. Again, we mentioned earlier, you can reach us by phone at 937-293-3914, on the web at sim-trainer.com. Or you can stop by the range at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L, and we'll be glad to answer any of your questions, take care of any of your shooting needs. We offer recreational shooting and a variety of educational opportunities. Stop by and see us. Right before the break, we had a caller that talked about clothing and the relevancy or the concern over whether his clothing would get blown up and his gun would be exposed. We obviously indicated that if a firearm inadvertently is exposed in public, there there is no violation of law, obviously. And one thing that raises this time of year is something that comes up repeatedly, basically year-round, but particularly in the summer, is how do you conceal your gun when it's hot like it is today and you want to wear a pair of shorts and a T-shirt? Well, I'm just going to tell you right now, it's a difficult proposition, but it's if you decide that you're going to carry, which is a serious responsibility, you're going to have to alter your wardrobe just a little bit. And I want to just offer the simple solution to that. I want to encourage people that if you're going to carry your gun on your hip, that you wear a pair of shorts that has belt loops, mm-hmm. and you use a good belt, and then you just simply do this. You do what we call double T-shirt. You wear one T-shirt that's snug to your body that will tuck down in the pants and keep the perspiration away from the gun, and then you wear an oversized T-shirt on the outside that's not going to let the gun imprint into the shirt, but it's going to be comfortable, yet it's going to be conceal the firearm. That's the best option. The other thing you can do is wear that T-shirt underneath and then wear a button-down shirt, just a standard button-down shirt with a collar, and you can just leave it with the tail out and either buttoned or unbuttoned just so it covers the gun. But you've got a couple of options. Now, I will tell you, you're not going to be the fashion statement. You're not going to make the fashion statement of the year. You're not going to be on the cover of GQ or the women's magazines. But regardless, man or woman, you're gonna need to take these things into consideration.
I was really hoping to get there someday, Jeff. I'm telling you.
Well, yeah. I can guarantee you or I are never going to be there, but maybe some of the other people. There's a few people that come down there that every week they have a different wardrobe. They're much closer than we are, but the other option, and I know a lot of people hate to hear it, is the fanny pack, especially man or woman.
Geek alert.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, here
but
we go.
Nice thing about the fanny pack, you can wear a pair of shorts with no belt or belt loops and whatever shirt you want to wear or no shirt at all, and you're still going to be in good shape because the fanny pack is a good option. It secures the firearm to your body. The only thing I want to encourage you to do is get a good fanny pack, and then I want you to practice with your weapon after you've checked it, double check it, and triple check it to make sure that you can access your weapon, and then you can access any of the other items that you may need, whether it's a cell phone to call the police in the middle of a situation or whatever the case might be. But you got to make sure that it's functional for the environment that you're going to go into. And this day and age, let's face it, you look out there today, basically anywhere you go, whether you're in the park, at the grocery store, you're going to probably see somebody with a fanny pack. And yeah, they might have the quote geek unquote look to them, but nonetheless, you don't know if they're carrying a firearm. And it's easy to seclude the gun in the fanny pack. It's going to be easily accessible, and it gives you a great option when the weather's like it is today.
And when Jeff says a good quality fanny pack, he's really talking about one that's designed to be used as a holster. There are several of the holster manufacturers make excellent fanny packs for carrying a firearm, and many of them are adjustable in the sense of that you can use it either right-handed or left-handed, and they have rip cords designed to be able to give you quick access to the gun but still be closed securely so that the gun is contained and is not going to fall out of that fanny pack when it's not supposed to. So make sure that it is designed as a holster and not just any old fanny pack that you drop a gun in. That's really not a good idea.
That's real critical because they actually beef up the fabric in those fanny packs so that it can hold the gun, because with the gun being in the fanny pack and you moving around over a very short period of time, if it's a flimsy fanny pack, it's going to actually basically tear its way through the fabric if it's cheap and it's not going to do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, and that's just really not a good way to go. Plus, then you're going to end up buying more fanny packs. And
absolutely.
That actually costs more than buying a good one to start with. Let's go out to the phones and talk to Kim in Dayton. Kim has a question about types of firearms. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've been carrying a Taurus PT-111. I was just wondering what your take on the Taurus guns are. I do practice with it, and, you know, so far it hasn't given me any problems. But I was just wondering how the reliability and everything on the Taurus line was.
You've pretty much answered your own question. You've been practicing, so I'm assuming, based on your comment, that you've not had any problems with it. The PT-111, as with most of the Taurus guns, are good guns. They functionally operate very well. They're easy to load. Some of them aren't, at least from the standpoint of the majority of people that come through concealed carry, I'd have to say that's on the low end as far as number goes, but I haven't seen any problems as far as functional operational errors or problems that would raise a concern. The PT-111 was real popular when it first came out, but quite frankly, the Glock 19, the Smith & Wesson M&P, and the Springfield XD kind of blew most of the other competition away. And Taurus makes great guns. They've been in the gun manufacturing business for a long, 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 long time. And there's really nothing negative I can say about it. And the key thing you said is that you practice with it.
Okay.
And that impresses the heck out of me, because that's the difference.
Okay.
Here's the thing that I find problematic. People go out and buy a gun, and maybe they shoot it one time, and then they carry it, and they maybe they only shot 50 rounds through it. Well, that didn't even give the gun a chance to get broke in. So if there was going to be a problem, they're not going to know about it till the problem crops up. But the fact that you get out and practice, and I don't know what that means, we recommend 50 rounds a month, certainly no less than 50 rounds every couple months. And if you can do more, fine. But with ammo prices and accessibility to range being the way they are, we think it's very important you try to get out as much as you can with whatever gun you get, because the biggest problem is people, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, Mark, and I want to encourage our listeners to call me if I'm wrong, based on their own experiences or the experiences of others. I'm going to go so far as to say the majority of people buy the gun and don't shoot it. That's going to be my assertion. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to challenge my listeners to call me in and prove me wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. But just based on what I've seen and what I see at gun shows, what I hear about people buying guns on the internet, they buy their gun, they put their ammo in it, they put it on their hip, and they haven't shot it. And they're thinking that the first time they're going to shoot it, they're going to be successful, is when they get involved in an altercation, and I beg to differ, and I'm really happy to hear one of the first comments you made is that you got the gun and you went out and practiced with it. That impressed me right from the get-go, and I think that's the key. Mark, you got comments on that?
I think one of the greatest things in terms of an opportunity to practice is to come down to the league. We have a competitive league on Tuesday night. The competition is not really the focus. The focus is training. We call it our Tuesday Tactical Training League, and if you want to come down, all you need to do is to have your own equipment. And, I mean, you could even rent equipment from the range if you wanted to do that. But if you have your own equipment, the stuff that you carry with is what we recommend. You don't need anything fancy. Yeah, your PT-111 would be just fine, and a box of ammo, some extra magazines, and then you'd be able to shoot our course of fire. It would give you the opportunity to get about 50 rounds through your gun in a somewhat stressful environment, only because, you know, we've got the clock running and you got, you know, things going on. It's a little bit different from standing in the stall.
Okay.
Nobody's shooting at you, though.
It's
only $12.
Okay.
And then plus a box of ammo, which is, for 9mm, that's 15. About, you know, $15 or so. So, you know, for less than $30, you can come down and you know, even if you don't want to do it every week, if you just want to do it every few weeks or so, you know, we run an 8-week series. The next one starts on the last Tuesday of this month, on the 27th of July. We're taking a couple of weeks off in the middle of the summer right now. But then on the 27th, we'll start up and we'll run a couple of weeks, and then we'll be breaking again for concealed carry and then run through the rest of the summer.
Okay. Do you have to pre-register?
No, you just show up. We open about between 5 and 5:30. We start setting up the range. We usually start shooting between 6 and 6:30, and we try to get done by 9 o'clock. If you're going to be later than about 8:15 or so, you ought to call the range just so we don't break down before you get there.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling the show.
You're welcome. Bye.
It's always good to hear someone who's doing the right thing. I mean, wants to know the right. That's a great question. How reliable is this gun? Is it something that I can bank my life on? Is it something that I can depend on when I really need it? That's the right question. And the best way to find that out is to shoot it plenty under different situations. Make sure that you practice with the ammo that you plan to carry. Now, you're not going to want to shoot that all the time because it's fairly expensive, but it's important to make sure that your gun functions with your ammo, and then try to find some practice ammo that matches about the same ballistics, so that when you fire your practice ammo, it gives you about the same response to the gun that you have when you fire your personal protection ammo. And then that way you'll be the best prepared you can possibly be, short of actually being in a violent encounter. And, you know, frankly, we don't want to go there if we don't have to.
You know, Mark, I went out on a limb there when I offered that challenge, and I mean it. I'm just a bit concerned that there's too many people out there that are going ahead and buying guns, and then they're not getting out and shooting them. I was so glad to hear her within her first sentence mention that she's shot it and she shoots on a regular basis, and that's the key.
It is.
Because most of the mainline manufacturers out there do a good thing, and that's what we appreciate.
All right, we're going to have to take our last break for the hour, and so we'll be back after this break. We've got some other things we want to talk about. We've got Richard on the phone, and we'll get to him. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro in for Shooting from the Hip. We'd If you'd like to get on the program, give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll do our best to get you on the air. We don't have a whole lot longer, so let's go right out to the phones, and we'll talk to Richard in Vandalia. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your comments to Kim, the young lady that called in about practice. If nothing takes place with practice.
No, there's really nothing that does. And getting as comfortable with the operation of your firearm that you plan to use for personal defense, should that ever be necessary, that's the only way you can count on the fact that it'll be there. How can we help you today?
My question is, I understand my obligations if I'm stopped by a law enforcement officer. If I have to tell him that I have a concealed carry permit and I do or do not have a weapon with me.
Actually, the law requires only that you inform if you do, but we recommend that you do either way. It's a good idea.
My question is, what if I'm riding with one of my golfing buddies or something like that? I'm not driving, and he gets stopped. Am I under the same obligations?
Technically, yes. I suppose, you know, if you weren't involved in some way, it would be hard to argue that if you were in a ever had a reason that came out and you got charged, it would be very difficult to argue that you weren't involved in interfacing with the police officer in the performance of his duties, and that's the requirement. So, yeah, it really is necessary that you do provide that information. I realize that can be a little bit awkward, particularly if you happen to be with folks that don't know that you carry a firearm. Maybe they're not that close to you personally, that they would not necessarily know about that aspect of your life, but that is what the law requires.
Logic would tell me I'd be better off to do it than withhold the information. So,
right. I will tell you one thing, though. There may be situations where you really don't have the opportunity, and I'll give you the mm-hmm. example. Many police officers, when they make a traffic stop, they approach with caution, obviously, and they're going to identify themselves, give the reason for the stop, and ask for their license and proof of insurance. And then once they get the information from the driver, they're going to go back and take whatever enforcement action they deem is appropriate, and you won't really have the opportunity. I would say in those kinds of circumstances, rational, reasonable decision-making should prevail, and I don't want you to jump out of your car and go to great lengths to make it known if you were the passenger in that type of vehicle. However, if time would allow and the situation warrants it, then certainly keep your hands in plain sight and just mention to the officer, I'm a concealed carry permit holder. I have my firearm with me. What would you like me to do? And likelihood is that he's going to say nothing at all. Just sit there and be just wait until I'm done with the enforcement action, and then I'm going to let you both be on your way, and then everything will be fine.
And one of the keys to that is keeping your hands in plain sight, not making any furtive movements, not reaching around and doing things that might draw attention or create some sort of suspicion.
What's really interesting about that is I'm not aware of a single case where a bad guy is going out of his way to let the law enforcement officer know that he has the gun. So we're not too concerned with the law-abiding citizens that's doing what he's supposed to do. And again, that's another reason why the Senate bills that have been proposed and some of the legislative changes that have been proposed over the last year are going to try to clean up some of the language to make it easier for law-abiding citizens to be just that, law-abiding citizens, and to carry without inconvenience and not be subjected to those kind of problems. But that's a very good question, and I just think rational, reasonable decision-making should prevail.
Richard,
you for your call.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Steven, who's calling us from a cell phone. Steve, welcome to the show.
How are you?
Well, we are great, thanks.
Well, I really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you very much.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead with your question.
I had a really close friend, best friend. Yeah, it had a 25 caliber Beretta Model 20.
Okay.
And what I did is he wanted to sell it. I bought it. And I had it. I gave it to my wife, for personal protection.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sons called and said, we took the firing pin and spring up because he was suffering from dementia.
So now you've got the gun back and you probably can't get parts for it. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of figured that. And
it's,
you know,
a tough one.
I'm going to tell you, here's the best thing there. Just forget about the gun. That's my opinion. Just forget about the gun.
Keep it as a memory if it's got some sentimental value.
And or trade it to somebody who you let know is missing a firing pin or whatever parts are missing, and trade it up for something a little bit better. But the hassles you're going to go through getting somebody to work on it and that, and then having to worry about whether or not it's going to function when you want it to function, aren't worth the pain in the butt for the you know, the fact that it's a 25 caliber pistol.
Well, it's a nice one, but, you know, I understand that. I would just...
Yeah, I figured. I've had that question before, not specifically with that gun, and there have been people that have made them inoperable for a variety of other reasons, just like you mentioned, and then next thing you know, the gun's no longer of use. But the best thing to do is just, you got two choices. Take it to a good armor, see if he can take care of it, and then make sure that it's fine, or the better course of action, just kind of mothball it or trade it in for something that you feel is more comfortable and more functional.
Well, that's perfectly fine.
Good.
I thank you.
Okay.
I thank you for your help.
Thank you for your
call. Thanks for calling the show. Let's go out to Adam calling from Greenville. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. What can we do for you?
Good. Well, I got a question for you. But first, I want to tell you, you guys have a great program, and you guys do a lot of good, and as far as educationally wise and everything else. So,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, I have a... When I was a kid, I got a shotgun that I hunted with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's a 20-gauge single-shot shotgun. And what I want to do, it has a cut-down stock and a cut-down barrel, you know, for a kid size, of course.
Okay.
I want to cut the barrel off and put a pistol grip on it for kind of a home defense shotgun. And you know, I just it'd be kind of a cool piece. But I want to make sure it's completely legal before I do something like that.
Well, we're glad you asked.
Yeah, exactly. Glad you asked. Remember that a shotgun has to be a minimum 18-inch barrel. The barrel has to be a minimum of 18 inches, and the overall length of the gun has to be more than 26 inches.
Okay, which it would not be if I...
That's right. So I think you answered your own question.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting gun that you have there, especially if you've had it since it was a kid. I'd be reluctant to go about hacking away at it. And let me just tell you, you take that same gun and you just tuck that stock underneath your arm and you basically have done the same thing, and it's going to do the exact same thing and probably be even a little bit more stable because you lock the stock in underneath your arm. And I'd be more than glad to show you the method that we recommend. We've taught law enforcement security personnel for many years to shoot the standard 870 as a personal protection weapon up close and personal, and it does exactly what it's supposed to do.
Okay. All right. So there's just no way, even if it's a home defense weapon, you can't.
No, sir. No, yeah. Sir. Because it's the issue is possession of a weapon that doesn't meet the required law lengths for barrel and total length.
Yes, it is still possible to get charged with a felony for existence while armed if they don't like the kind of gun you got.
And I don't want that.
You really don't.
Okay, guys. Well, I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you for your call.
Thanks very much for calling the show. And we're pretty much at the end of the hour. So I want to invite everyone to tune us in next week on when we're back for Shooting from the Hip. Stick around for after us. Well, we'll be talking about medicine and other medical issues with Just for the Health of It. And then at 4 o'clock with Julie Beal for Miami Valley Real Estate Now. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.